Sportsnet 960 Hockey Insider Eric Tuhatchek, brought to you by Eastside Kia. Pick Your Payment is on now. Finance a new 2017 Sorento for just $157 biweekly or lease for only $149 biweekly. Visit them at eastsidekia.ca.
Eric Tuhatchek from the Globe and Mail, our NHL Insider Mondays and Fridays here on the Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Eric, as always, appreciate this. Hey, I got to get just your overall synopsis and your observations going all the way back to Wednesday when news of the expansion draft started hitting Twitter in the hours before the actual draft and what we've seen in the 48 hours since. It's been a pretty busy last 2 days.
Yeah, it's been absolutely crazy. And I have to say that, you know, that the developments today, at least a couple of them, really surprised me, especially Chicago. I mean, I just finished a conference call with Stan Bowman. And the one thing that, I mean, he kept talking about, you know, you can't stay still. You have to keep moving forward. You have to keep getting younger. But there is a part of me that looks at that looked at this organization and said, they had 109 points, Pat. 109 points. They were the top team in the Western Conference. I get that they lost in the first round to Nashville. They were swept. There was a lot of disappointment that stemmed from that. But I don't understand how, on the basis of a 10-day snapshot, you would make the kind of monumental changes that they made. First of all, I was surprised when the organization took so long to do their postmortem and then came out and said, okay, this is we can't tolerate this anymore. There's got to be changes. And it was like, wow, that seemed like an overreaction. And my feeling was that as time passed, they would calm down a little bit and go back to the fact that, you know what, we had a really good team. We integrated a lot of young players into our lineup, and we were still able to win. And so the fact that they didn't, you know, respond in the playoffs, that's typical of young players, you know, not named McDavid and Draisaitl. It didn't surprise me that much that they didn't get what they got in the regular season from their young players. But they were building a foundation, and, you know, you can't win every year. So, you know, fast forward to today, and it's like, oh, my goodness, really? Nicholas Schalmerson? I mean, to me, you know, like, I think he's one of the five most underrated players in the National Hockey League. We were covering all those years that Chicago was winning Stanley Cups night after night. He was one of their most consistent players. He contributed lots to those championships there, an awful lot to them. And so, you know, to trade him for two defensemen that, you know, they might be okay. I mean, I don't know how good they're going to be. I mean, I get that they have to replace Trevor Van Riemsdyk, but now they've created two holes on that blue line. And I just don't think that these young kids that they got are going to be able to step in and produce at the same level. So I think what they're essentially saying is they are prepared to take a step backwards in order to see if they can reload down the road. But I don't see them being as good a team. I mean, Panarin had that tremendous chemistry with Kane. I get that Saad, you know, the one thing about Jonathan Toews was kind of lost in all of this because, you know, he'd been playing with Marian Hossa for years and years. And then last year, Hossa dropped to the third line for a lot of the years. And he was playing with a couple of kids. So you bring Saad back, and now Toews has got an elite-level player to play with him. And you know, one of the things that Sam Bowman said that is probably true is that as good as Panarin and Kane were in terms of their chemistry, Kane has demonstrated over his career that he can pretty much play with anyone and make anyone better. So I think that they feel that, you know, Kane will play with Anisimov, and then, you know, a whole bunch of people will get a chance to audition on that line as well. So it seemed like an overreaction to me. And especially, I mean, with the draft being in Chicago, I'm sure the town is just on its ear right now wondering what the heck is going on.
I'm with you. It seems like an overreaction, and I know that getting swept in the first round is something that this group is not used to. They've won three playoff games in the last 4 years. I understand all that, but I'm with you. Like, and very rarely do overreactions and knee jerks, and I guess we don't know if that's the case, but it sure does seem like it, and very rarely do those work, right?
If you're an average team, I can see why you might want to be aggressive to try and become a better team. If you're a poor team, like Arizona is a poor team, I think you have to go out and, especially if you're starting to get a sense that your fan base is a bit disenchanted with losing year after year after year, I get why you need to be aggressive. if you're the top team in the Western Conference, I don't think you need to, you know. But let's see how it goes. You know, like, to me, this is a step backwards in the hopes of moving two steps forward down the road. And you know, so let's see. I mean, you know, they've done a really good job there. You know, Dale Tallon, I think, put the bones of the organization in place. I think Stan Bowman has been a very good steward of that organization as the general manager. He's made the tough decisions in terms of moving players out for salary cap reasons. And these are tough decisions again. But they weren't forced upon them. That's the one difference between this year and other years. When you've had to let other players go in other years, it's because you had no choice. Financially, you couldn't pay everybody. But this was more a case of, you know, in the case of, you know, someone like Panarin, who might be a free agent in 2 years. Now you've got Saad, who's a bit younger. He's, you know, you will have him, you know, they talk about cost certainty. You have him under contract for a few more years. The young players, certainly you'll have them under your control longer than Chalmerson. But I don't know. If I was running Chicago, I'd be prepared to dismiss 10 bad days in the postseason and say, let's take another shot at this. And then maybe 12 months from now, if it didn't work out, then you do these kinds of things. But, you know, maybe they're looking at Los Angeles and saying, you know, there's a team that kept thinking, okay, you know, let's keep pushing, and they're just incrementally getting worse and worse and worse. And so maybe this is a proactive step designed to avoid that kind of, you know, creep in the wrong direction.
He's Eric Dehatchek, NHL insider from the Globe and Mail, every Monday and Friday on the Big Show here on Sportsnet 960. The Fan. The other big wheeler and dealer so far today has been the Arizona Coyotes. They make the aforementioned Chalmerson deal with the Blackhawks. They acquire Derek Stepan and Antti Raanta from the New York Rangers. What have you made of the work so far of the Arizona Coyotes?
Well, I like the Chalmerson deal a lot more than I like the Stepan Raanta deal. And partly that's because, you know, from the little bit that I saw of D'Angelo last year, I think he's going to be a really good player. I like him better than the other two defensemen that Chicago got. So that's part of it. The other thing is that, like, Derek Stepan is a very good two-way player. You know, he's a guy that will kill penalties. You know, he's kind of miscast as a number one center in New York. They had kind of a 1A, 1B, 1C type of an arrangement. But the thing that I don't like about it is $6.5 million is a lot for Derek Stepan. Like, to me, he's not a $6.5 million player. He just doesn't score enough. If you're going to pay $6.5 million, I think you have to put up more elite scoring numbers than Derek Stepan has. He's just he's a consistent 55 to 60 point guy. Good two-way player. Again, you know, quiet, but you know, he's good dressing room presence. He'll provide leadership, I think, on a young team that has probably a need for that, especially now that Shane Doan isn't there. So, they'll be better. You know, they gave up a draft choice that isn't going to play in the NHL for 2 years, and a player that probably needs a couple of years to really become an established NHL defenseman. So, short term, obviously, Arizona is going to be better with Stepan and Raanta in the lineup. I just think that for the contractual commitment to Stepan, you could almost see Stepan as a guy that New York would be interested in moving as a salary dump and give you something to take him. So, you know, to me, they surrender two significant assets for a goalie that was available in the expansion draft and for a player that probably is overpaid.
It's funny, Rob and I were talking about this a little earlier. What about, and specifically more on Chalmerson, because I think you're right, it would be a little bit more difficult to move a step on with that contract. But is Chalmerson a guy that stays put in Arizona, or are the Coyotes using him as potentially a guy that they could flip elsewhere with so many defensemen potentially being moved at this year's draft and being rumored? Is he a guy that might end up going elsewhere before the end of the weekend?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, my sense of what is going on in Arizona is that the new owner is fed up with the constant rebuilding and hearing about, you know, next year and taking on money and this and all those moves designed for some faraway future. I think he feels that they need to expedite this process. I'm sure that that's what the philosophical difference was that caused Dave Tippett, the very well-respected coach, to part ways with the team yesterday. And so I think that the moves you saw are designed to help this team become more competitive. I mean, they were good, you know, for a young team. I thought they played hard last year. I thought they did really. The coaching staff actually did a really good job of maximizing what they could get out of a very, very young team. And so, Chalmerson to me is a really good fit with Oliver Ekman-Larsson. I mean, if I'm whoever goes in there to coach that team, I suspect that those two guys will play tons of minutes. They will be probably two of the top, 10 or 12 players in the National Hockey League in terms of ice time. I think they're just going to ride those two guys, and they're going to get the most out of them. And I think that if you have those two guys on the ice for 45% of the game, that's just going to make your team better, and now you have to just fill in the gaps around them. So I think Chalmerson is a guy that will help them become more competitive, and I think that that's the same philosophy with bringing in a Derek Stepan at this point, that they just want to be more competitive, and to be more competitive, you have to have more experience than they have right now.
Are you expecting the rest of the day and the rest of the weekend to be busy as well, Eric?
I am, yeah. Well, the Hamonic thing is interesting because like a lot of people caught wind of that a couple of days ago and really got to thinking about what you would give up to get him. I mean, I like him as a number four. And I think that the way things are shaping up with in Calgary, if you could get him as a four and maybe have, sign Stone as a five, then I like the way all the other pieces kind of click into place, assuming that, Mike Smith gives them the level of goaltending that they think they're going to get from him. You just need to fill those gaps on the depth chart. And the four is more important than the five, but the five is critical too, because eventually you are going to get an injury and you need someone to step up and play those minutes. And the guy that was doing that very effectively the last few years, Derek Englund, is now part of the Vegas Golden Knights. So this is really critical. With all of this shuffling of the expansion deck, I'm really interested in seeing who gets what. And if the Flames end up being the runners-up in this Hamonic sweepstakes because they don't want to go the two number ones, do you circle back and try to pluck somebody out of Vegas? Vegas still does have a number of defensemen that they are able to trade. And, I think that a lot of people have connected, even before Vegas made their pick from Calgary, one of the players that they were said to be interested in was Michael Ferland, and simply because of the Brandon connection. Kelly McCrimmon is a part of the yep. brain trust there in Vegas, and the Flames, of course, protected Ferland. What if the price of acquiring one of those Vegas defensemen is Michael Ferland? Would you do that? I think I would. If I can't get the Hamonic deal done, knowing that I've got a reasonable collection of wingers in right now, with Frolik and Gaudreau and the way Tkachuk came on this year, I think I would surrender a young forward like Ferland for all of the good that he did for them last year and all the chemistry that he was able to develop with on that top line. If I can't get Hamonic and I need to fill that gap for a number four guy, I'd be shopping Vegas's list right now.
It's funny because the rumored asking price, and this is just rumored right now and things change and there's bargaining and all that type of stuff, but two first round picks sounds like a pretty hefty price to pay for a guy that would end up being a number four defenseman. How much of the weighing risk and how desperately do the Flames need that number four guy? Is it at an all cost type thing?
Well, not at an all cost, but I would say that, that if... they're drafting 16 in a draft that people say has about 15 players in it, So you are giving up an opportunity to draft somebody that's probably 2 or 3 years away. I don't think they are that concerned about giving up a mid-first round pick in the 2017 draft. I think what they're more concerned about is if the 18 or the 19 drafts are deeper, to give up a future choice in those drafts is just harder to do. You just can't see that far out in the future. And the minute you start, giving up multiple first round picks, they gave up a lot of picks in the Dougie Hamilton trade. This year they don't have a two and a three, I don't believe. So you can't you can't just keep flipping picks all the time. Eventually you have to draft and develop some guys. So I would go hard on Hamonic, and maybe you could lottery protect a second first round pick, so that if you do unfortunately miss the playoffs in 18 or 19, that the pick gets pushed back a year or two. But I like Hamonic's contract. I like all the things that he brings to the table. He was one of those players that won a humanitarian award a couple of nights ago in Vegas. I don't know him personally, but the sense I have from talking to people who do have contact with him on a regular basis is he's a great fit on a team. And, again, in the same way that, Chalmerson is just a low maintenance, good pro. Those are the guys you win with, right? So if he's available and they're prepared to trade him, sometimes you just have to step up and overpay. And, you know, he's a player that I might be prepared to overpay to get.
Final thought for you, Eric, and that is on the team that has kind of ruled the roost over the weekend. I'm just curious as to your thoughts on this Vegas group. They've got 3 first-round picks tonight. They've got 6 picks in the first 2 rounds, and they now have the starting pieces of a team, although I don't think anybody believes they're done. Just your overall thoughts on what Vegas has done, what we've seen so far, and how you like the makeup of their team after the expansion draft.
Well, if that was the team that, you know, if the 23 best players taken the other night were put into the lineup on opening night, I would say that they're the worst team in the league, you know, or close, you know, right there with Colorado is the worst team in the league. I mean, you know, I love their goaltender. You know, I think they've got, you know, a lot of good journeyman defensemen, but nobody that, you know, they don't have, you know, a Brent Burns, an Eric Carlson, a Mark Giordano. I mean, players, you know, the defensemen like that weren't available. The closest is Shea Theodore, and Theodore, you know, on a deep Anaheim team when they had all their people healthy was in the press box by the third round of the playoffs. So, you know, they're okay on the blue line. They're good in goal, and I don't think that they have nearly enough scoring to be competitive in today's NHL. So, you know, I think that what ends up happening is, I mean, they did a good job under the circumstances, but eventually the expansion euphoria is going to die down. Grim reality is going to set in, and even though they may want to play an offensive game, I think they're going to be in a lot of low-scoring games that they lose by a goal. Now, having said that, that's, you know, imagining this group, you know, on October the 4th or 5th. I don't think that there'll be any semblance to that. I think they will be making changes in the next few days. They'll be drafting players. I think they will continue to flip players after July 1st. People who, you know, can't get what they want in free agency, I think, are going to come calling to Vegas. So they may actually be weaker in 2 weeks' time, or it may well be that they get a premium asset in exchange for, you know, several younger pieces or, you know, cheaper pieces. So it's still a work in progress. Really difficult to assess, you know, where they are. But if they had to play right now, they wouldn't be very good.
Great stuff as always, Eric. Appreciate it. And it should be a very, very busy weekend. So we'll have lots to react to on Monday when we speak again. Thank you, pal.
Okay, thank you.